cabin house. We spend a major part of our time there, and the rest of the time during winter, of course, in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, we're going to go ahead with those plans as we had.
This is a real tree of an interview with Dr. and Beth Hyatt on the 16th of March, 1977. I think we're just discussing the difficulty into the financial situation and what you see as a danger in terms of state government moving into controlling part of the university and part in influencing university governance. Just to back up a step in terms of the financial advice you were getting, it seemed to me to be the problem where you got information several months after you could have acted on it successfully. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm just trying to characterize the Mr. Hollinger's part in this and say that you were kind of serious and not sure what you want to do.
I think one of the there are two problems I guess in this. One is that the information was available from Max Hollinger if you asked for it, but if you didn't know there was a problem and didn't ask, you never got it. In other words, we're pretty much in the dark most of the time. The regents were in the dark on these things. Just a year ago, Max Hollinger resigned. But under the regent's policy for all university employees, which included those on the president's staff, notices of non-reappointment had to be given 15 months in advance. So his notice was given in March of 76, but his termination date is 30th of June 1977. Now, the reason I point this out is that this provides 15 months of what you might call lame duck administration of a financial system that was in chaos, apparently. And I think that anybody who has submitted his resignation and knows he's going to leave is not going to be terribly interested in solving the problems. And I think that's exactly what occurred. Max, I think, relied very heavily on other people, particularly Larry Miller. Larry Miller was just almost hopelessly overworked. He was really the only professional accountant we had for some time. And by any stretch of the imagination, we didn't ever have more than three. And they're doing this university's business. So we weren't really very far removed from the days when somebody with a little green eye shade and a pencil were doing all the accounting. And now, there had been requests to increase the number of people in the accounting division, but they never were accompanied with the compelling reasons that we're in chaos, you know, we're in trouble, and this sort of, nobody ever told this. So it wasn't until we got into this mess with the payroll, here starting about 1 July, but it became very apparent that we were in real trouble in terms of the manpower within our accounting division to do the job. I just simply couldn't keep up with it. And so at that time, I brought in an acquaintance of mine from Washington who was a very distinguished financial manager and asked him spend 2 weeks with us and go through this thing and advise me on what needed to be done on solving the payroll problem, which he did. So we then started to take steps to solve it. And we got the payroll thing pretty well solved by Christmas time, just about 1st of January, although I didn't get the W-2s, we're a week order to do it, we had to put almost the whole accounting system on payroll, all of personnel. We had to work task forces out because we had an ungodly number of retroactive type things to handle, some for the union, some for other employees. So we put people on new payroll schedules. They had to have retroactives run back to the, you know, the 1st of July and all that stuff. It's just a horrible situation with the payroll system. That's when we really realized that we were in serious trouble. So at that time, I suggested they hire 3 more accountants. Just put them on. We'll find the money someplace. And so they started to advertise for them. But they couldn't get anybody to apply that was really adequate. And this has been one of our problems here. Even if we wanted people, we couldn't get them. For a while, it was pipeline wages and so on. They were taking all our people. Later on, I don't know what, but I think our salaries were probably not sufficiently competitive in that area. So we simply couldn't hire anybody. In July, the regents had, in effect, replaced Hollinger with Earl Peterson, who used to be here as business manager of Northern Region. Peterson accepted the position. I spent all day one Sunday with him going over the things that I knew about that he should look into. He went back to Montana where he was then living and called in about a week or 10 days and said that his wife decided she wasn't going to come back to Fairbanks to live, and so he resigned. This was a real blow because this culminated several months of searching and going through the usual EEO practices and so on of getting applicants. The second man on the list then was asked to come, and he decided he wouldn't come because he wasn't the first man on the list, so we lost him also. At that time, we really didn't know which way to turn. I didn't want to advertise over again and spend another 45 days or something advertising. So we began to do as much of a personal investigation as we could. And we turned up a man at the University of Maryland by the name of Robert Brown. We brought him out to look over the job, talk to the regents. He was most impressive. The regents liked him. And so he was employed. And he came up, stayed here for about 10 days, went over everything, knew exactly what needed to be done, laid it all out on a series of work charts, what each person was supposed to do, and he left. He couldn't break away from Baltimore on such short notice. Then he was coming back just at a regents meeting just before Christmas to go again for the next 10 days before he would come back finally in January. He called just before the regents meeting and said, I've just been through a... Well, he was ill when he was out here a little, but he said he'd just been through a major examination and he had to have surgery. And he couldn't come. And he decided that he wasn't going to have surgery before Christmas, spoil his holiday, so put it off till afterwards. And then had a second group of physicians examine him. They completed their work on the 15th. I was in Washington on the 17th to talk with him, and indeed he turned out to have a cancer of the stomach and resigned. Better stay right where he was. So we had nothing but what you might call rotten luck in trying to get a replacement for Max Hollinger. And when I came back from that visit, I asked Maurice Arth to take over as an acting vice president for finance, simply because there was nowhere else to turn at that time. We had no other candidates. And we put the selection of a candidate in the hands of a major national search company that specializes in this kind of thing. Well, it was only a week or so after that everything broke loose and ended up with me stepping out of the presidency and the state insisting on taking over a bookkeeping system and various other management devices. So that's about the story of this, of the actual events that went into this.
I was going to recap it just for a second and then move on to something else. Max is apparently always the guy and a guy who plays it very close to the chest, and perhaps, as you were saying, you didn't learn about the doggone thing until you were too far down the road to really pull it out. I guess I was surprised that they went into the new accounting system on the 1st of July for the ledger when they already seemed to have problems enough handling the program that we're trying to. Maybe you've already characterized, I think, much of the relationship you saw with the administration in the region, the legislature. Is there anything else you'd like to add in terms of the regions? The regions were almost all brand new. Did you say this is a problem?
I think that undoubtedly this created a problem. The region's terms, you know, are 8 years, and they're 8 years for good reason, that they want people to be in long enough to, one, to avoid politics, and two, to get a pretty firm idea of what a university is all about. Now, it just so happened that through resignations because of disclosure problems and deaths and retirements from the board, that in the period of less than 2 years, Governor Hammond appointed a totally new board with the exception of Regent Fate. And he was appointed as the only holdover regent. So, in effect, the board was all new, many of them quite new, obviously didn't have time to learn about the university, and I think that this great pressure that was brought to bear on the university by the legislature and the state government would not have been received quite in the same way by an older board, well, better established and more aware of the situation.
Much like the board when you first came here.
The boards, prior boards had been, you know, in the chairs for a number of years. They didn't get bowled over very readily, and I think some of it had to do with the newness of the board. No question about it.
Were they much of a assistance to you? I don't mean in this particular problem, but I think we've passed that by. In the other administration, the university, or with just the question of being so new that they couldn't. They were still learning rather than adding their expertise to the university.
I would say that their newness prevented them from being as useful maybe as they could possibly have been. On the other hand, there's not too many things that you really go to the board for in terms of advice, particularly unless it's something related to something their specialties or something related to the community or community groups in which they are supposed to interface for you, things of this sort. You usually don't go to the board and ask advice a lot. I think if a president had to ask advice all the time of the board, they'd probably give him a bounce. Because the president ought to know a great deal more about the university than any board could ever possibly know. After all, we've given our whole life to a university. And the board is, in effect, supposed to represent the public, the people that you're trying to serve. And I think they can do this best after they learn how a university functions. But when you've got a totally new board, that simply wasn't always possible.
Do you want to direct yourself at all to direct or indirect contact with the Board of Regents?
Well, I think I'd just like to leave it by the way we left it.
Okay. Let's turn to a little bit more positive aspect. What essentially your life's work has been in the marine fisheries area, and you have an appointment there, and you mentioned earlier that you're anticipating kind of more work in that area and trying to bring the program together. What
here at the university was president of the university and professor of marine biology, the way it's written on my contract. That's not unusual. That most presidents have their own academic profession also written in them that way. This university has a very large number of people involved in the marine sciences one way or another, or in fisheries or the applied marine sciences. The Institute of Marine Sciences, of course, is wholly devoted to this. It's a multi-million dollar operation. The Institute of Arctic Biology has a number of people who are working in some aspect of marine science. The Seward Oceanographic Center has a number of people down there working in marine sciences. The fishery educational programs that we have established have now people in Juneau, in Kodiak, and on this campus in marine or aquatic science. The so-called Marine Advisory Program. This is a group of extension, marine extension agents that work out of the Cooperative Extension Service. We have about seven on that group now. Are rather important. They're kind of a direct contact with the fishing industry. They're involved. We have the so-called Sea Grant Program, which at its inception was calculated to function rather like the land grant college program, except that there wouldn't be land grants with it, but it would be related, the work would be related to people making their living from the sea, just like the land grant college was originally conceived as relating to people making their living from the land. This program is rather extensive, now about $750,000 from the federal government coming in and matched by a somewhat similar sum from the state. It is involved with instruction, with research, with extension, with publication of materials of interest to both fishermen and school children. This program is rather unique in that there are really three stages of evolution. One is when you have Sea Grant projects, and that's where we were up to this year. Just individual projects. These were reviewed every year by a national site visiting team and so on, and your money was always in short supply. The next phase after you developed a while was what they call the institutional program. And that's where we are now. We're in the first year of our institutional program for Sea Grant. And this is kind of a prelude to Sea Grant College status, which we should have had years ago in Alaska because we got more people involved with the sea than anybody else. So somehow they never did get at it. So we are now looking for Sea Grant College status, and this is one of the areas where I hope to function very well. Before I left Hawaii, we got Sea Grant College status at Hawaii, with far less reason than Alaska has to get Sea Grant status. So what we really need to do is to pull all of these programs together, at least in some way of presenting them, so that people can see that University of Alaska really is in the marine sciences in a very big way. Now all they see is one aspect, the Institute of Marine Science, or Sea Grant, or education program. They don't ever see them as a whole. So I think the first job that I have to do is to really find out what's going on, who's doing it, where, and pull this all together so that when any presentation is made to the state or to the federal government, we present a united front on our marine program that really I think will be quite spectacular. So I feel that once we can get this underway, we can keep it underway. And one of the requirements that the Sea Grant College program has, this is a special program now handled by NOAA, is that the president's office has a coordinator or a Sea Grant college head right there. So right under the president. In other words, they don't want it scattered around some other college and so on. And so my appointment as one that will essentially be in the president's office will satisfy that requirement. So I look forward with a great deal of pleasure to pulling all this sort of thing together, the sort of thing I did some years ago when I was director of research at Hawaii. And that doesn't mean I'm going back behind the bench and do research and so on. I've been out of the business too long for that. But what it does mean is I will know what's going on, and I can pull it together in a way I think that nobody behind the bench can ever do.
Right. Mrs. Hyatt, not too long until your husband is in a position to retire, and you mentioned that you have some property in Kenai that you hope to build on.
Yes, we do have. We had intended anyhow to start building this year, because when, in fact, my husband does have his formal retirement, we would like to spend the major part of our time here in Alaska, and then let's say the cold winter months in Hawaii. So we had intended to start building this summer, regardless of what happened, and until this new change in our lives did come up. So we will continue with those plans, and the house will be completed, say, by next year, and the time we retire, it will be ready for us to move into, and we would share part of the time with Hawaii. May I add just one thing to this, if you have time? I would just like to say that, to me, I have never come in contact with a more, let's say, supportive group of university women than the ones on this campus. The ones in Anchorage, I'm sure, had the same feelings, or similar ones, and the ones in Juneau, perhaps elsewhere in the state, they did not have access to me, so I cannot perhaps mention them too much in this statement, but I do want to give my thanks to the university women and all of the women on this campus who, from whom I could not have had more support and loving friends during major crisis in my life.
Just wondering if there are any other remarks you'd like to make about the values that you seem to have enjoyed in Alaska and difficulties other than the ones we've been discussing.
Well, Paul, let me just say that I'm not sure exactly when I'll retire. I really don't have to retire in 78. I just simply told him I was going to retire from the presidency in 78. I could go another year and still be legal, but I may not want to at that time. In any event, I'm looking forward to retiring down on the peninsula. The kind of values that I look for, the quality of life, is not very different, I'm sure, than most people who come to Alaska. They kind of like the freedom, the open spaces, the lack of pollution, and the abundance of wildlife, fish, and so on. I'm an inveterate fisherman. There's no question about that. I'd almost rather fish or hunt than do anything else. And we have many friends on the Kenai Peninsula, and I think we're going to really enjoy it. I'm giving my personal library to the Kenai Peninsula Community College. I'm going down now with a material of several thousand volumes, a large number of journal series, and so on, particularly in the marine sciences. I think this will give them quite a shot in the arm down there, and we're only going to be about a half mile from the college, and I'm going to enjoy the association down there with them.
You've mentioned that you're still involved in the Japanese, U.S. Japanese, I forgot what that was, fisheries?
Yes, Japanese Cooperative Science Program.
Yep. Do you still anticipate involvement in that with State Department and other federal agencies?
Yes. I will. I'm the American so-called co-chairman of the U.S.-Japan Science Cooperation Program. This is the oldest, longest-standing bilateral program that we have in science cooperation. It's a very extensive program now. Quite a number of people from the university here have participated in it. I have a Japanese counterpart who's chairman of the Japanese side. We meet once a year, first in one country and then the other. This year we'll be meeting in Washington, D.C. But what we do is meet and decide on the program for the following year, and advise the agencies that support them, mostly the National Science Foundation in the United States. But this is an international program that's handled by the State Department because it involves our foreign relations. It's a really good group of people. We have some outstanding people on the committee, and I look forward to continuing that very much. So one of the other things I look forward to continuing is my board chairmanship on SOHIO. One thing that the governor has never been too pleased about, but I've talked with him at length on this. At least my old board of regents were very adamant that I should stay on that board, because they felt, as do I, that it's better to work with these oil companies from the inside than to be sparring on the outside. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have anybody on the board that speaks up for Alaska or Alaskan values, they aren't going to know about them. And they view my role as very significant on the board, and I could see no conflict whatsoever being involved with them. After all, we're going to be involved with these oil companies for the next many decades in Alaska, and come what may, we're going to have to coexist.
Is there any other things that you folks would like to add and kind of wrap this up there?
No, I can just say that I have, as I said, I've enjoyed being here and being in the position with Bob and sharing it with him, and being able to share my, sort of say, my love for Hawaii and Japan with people in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, giving talks at various times on this particular subject. And I feel now that with the support that we've had that I mentioned earlier, that I go away with a very happy feeling about the experiences here on the campus.
Well, we consider it a little bit unfair that the university was able to employ two people from one salary while other people had to involve one of their staffs. I'd like to thank you both my sincere thanks and appreciation for making the time available and for being as open and candid as you both have been. It's really a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you, Paul.
Paul, I appreciate having an opportunity to do it. I suppose if you hadn't done this, I would never have gotten around to it.
Well, we look forward to chatting back with you again sometime, a little bit more distant and more perspective.
Yeah, once I have a chance to look at this whole thing a little more, I'd like to maybe express my thoughts on this particular action that's going on at the moment. The sacrifice of the president, I think, is